We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha, text number 9. Translation: Lord Brahma said, "My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions." Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The relationship between the father and the son is always sublime. The father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son, and he is always ready to help the son in his progress in life. But in spite of the father's goodwill, the son is sometimes misguided because of his misuse of personal independence. Every living entity, however small or big he may be, has the choice of independence. If the son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. The father and son relationship, as exhibited here in the dealings of Brahma and Manu, is excellent. Both the father and the son are well qualified, and their example should be followed by all humankind. Manu, the son, unreservedly asked the father, Brahma, to instruct him, and the father, who was full of Vedic wisdom, was very glad to instruct. This example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrajadam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamsha He Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namashreshtam Manumabhi Sachi Putramatra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Grajamurupurim Madhurim Goshtavatim Radhakundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pradita Kribaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi. Hare Krishna. This verse and this purport is very much instructive. Here, the relationship, the perfect relationship between a father and a son is narrated. As it is mentioned here, the father is well qualified, so is the son. Who is the father? Father is Lord Brahma, and son is Swayambhuva Manu. So father's name, or Brahma's another name, is Swayambhuva. His name is Swayambhuva. Why he is addressed as Swayambhuva? Because he was self-manifested from the Lord. So he just opened his eyes, then he could only see a lotus flower. He couldn't see anything else. So he is known as Swayambhuva, self-manifested. Since Manu was manifested from Lord Brahma, from Swayambhuva. He is known as Swayambhuva. So he is known as Swayambhuva Manu. And all the living entities and the humankind especially is known as Manava. Why are they known as Manava? Because ultimately all the humankind are descendants of Manu. So they are known as Manava. So we are following in the disciplic succession, coming from the Lord to Brahma to Manu and so on and so forth. So here, the relationship between a qualified father and a son is considered very sublime. This is very important in two levels. It is very important when we understand when one has a qualified father, when one has an enlightened father, the relationship becomes very sublime. Similarly, this applies to the relationship between a disciple and a spiritual master. So, this verse very clearly mentions the disciplic succession, the mood of disciplic succession as well. So, let's try to understand the relationship between the father and the son. It is mentioned in the Vedas that son is the representative of the father. We know the instance when Balaram killed who? Ramaharshana Sutta, right? Because when Balaram arrived at the assembly of all the sages in Naimisharanya, which was headed by Ramaharshana Sutta, he didn't get up. He thought, I am the leader of all the Brahmanas and I am qualified to speak Vedas, so I know Vedas. So when Lord Balaram appeared, he didn't bother getting up. He was puffed up. What did Balaram do? He took a kushagras and he just touched the body of Ramaharshana Sutta. Immediately what happened? He fell dead. Then all the sages said, what you have done is, in one sense it is right, because you are the all independent Lord. You are Lord Balaram, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, we all have elected our Ramaharshana Sutta as the leader of the society of all the Vedic Brahmanas and all the spiritualists. And we had already given him the blessings that you will live for a long time. And now you have actually put down our words. So you are setting a wrong example. Even though you are independent, you are setting a wrong example. So you have to reconcile the situation. So Lord Balaram, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he can do that. So on one level, he had to give life back to Ramaharshana Sutta. At the same time, he had to punish him. See, he had already punished him. So if we bring him back to life, in one sense, he is undoing his action. So which is inappropriate for the Supreme Lord. So since he is the Supreme Lord and he can deal with the contradiction, what he did? He brought his son. And his son became the next Acharya. So in that way, the disciplic succession was kept intact. And his blessings, or all the Brahmana's blessings, were kept intact. So his son is representing the father. So this is the position of the son when he is actually following the father. So that's why it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are three kinds of sons. There are three kinds of sons. This is equally applicable to disciples also. So, because in Kali Yuga, many of the fathers are not qualified. So as the sons or the daughters. So when we try to understand the position of father in the Kali Yuga, many of them have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Right? The last thing they want to hear is that their son or daughter has become Krishna conscious. They don't mind anything else. If they become, I was speaking to one boy, he's not an Indian, but he has similar background, Asian background. So he became a devotee and he started chanting 16 rounds. And his parents visited Melbourne. And parents were very much concerned about the future of the son. So his father made a very interesting statement that if my son becomes a drunkard, it's okay. If he goes to nightclubs, it's okay. If he womanizes, that is okay. Because that is normal. Any young man would do in the society. But now he is chanting and he is becoming Krishna conscious. That is the worst thing to happen. So this is the consciousness of Kali Yuga parents. So we cannot say that we have to follow all the orders of such kind of fathers. Rather, we need to show compassion unto them by sharing Krishna consciousness, by our good behavior. It's not that we can just go and give the whole Bhagavad Saptah to them. You know, if we are staying with the parents for 7 days, you know, 7 days we finish all Bhagavatam to them and we think that they are going to become devotees immediately. But the preaching should be primarily by our proper action, proper behavior. Words will not work with parents. So now, when we consider these three kinds of sons, it is said the first kind of sons are that they can think, they can understand what father thinks. They know what father is thinking. They know what are the desires of the father. And then they are ready to act upon the desires of the father. This is considered the first class sons. Or it is applicable to the disciples also. This is the first class disciple. A first class disciple knows the heart of his guru. It's very high, right? It is very difficult to know the heart of the spiritual master and to act accordingly. That is first class disciple. In fact, Srila Prabhupada was a first class disciple. When Srila Prabhupada wrote an offering for his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, devotees read his offering in front of their Guru Maharaj. So it was a poem in English, and in which one stanza or one line was the impersonal calamity. When that stanza, that the impersonal calamity, when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur heard these two words, impersonal calamity, then Bhakti Siddhanta became very happy and he said, he has understood my heart. So Bhakti Siddhanta said, Srila Prabhupada has understood his heart just by that word, these two words. Because the whole bhakti philosophy is to cut down this impersonal misconception and to establish the personal philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That's the reason in the pranam mantra of Srila Prabhupada, what is the two prominent words? Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Paschatya Desha Tarine. So, Nirvishesha and Shunyavad. Nirvishesh, that is the impersonal philosophy. So, Srila Prabhupada was so humble that he himself wrote the pranam mantra for himself, right? He himself wrote, I think, the pranam mantra and passed down to his disciples. So, the key word was impersonalist. His philosophy is to cut the impersonal philosophy. The personal philosophy is to cut down the impersonal philosophy and to establish the supremacy of Krishna. So this is a first class disciple. He knows the heart of the spiritual master. And so Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was ready to talk very intimately to his disciple. We know the pastime near Radhakund. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Srila Prabhupada that there is fire in the mud. He already saw his prominent disciples were fighting in the Bagh Basar Gaudiya Math for different rooms. Because the preaching brought so much of opulence. When we preach Krishna's glories, that will naturally bring opulence. That will naturally bring facilities. But a preacher and a devotee can get attached to the facilities. And that is the fall down of a preacher. It is the fall down of a devotee. So that's what happened to the prominent disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They started fighting over room. Who is going to occupy which room? So Bhakti Siddhanta understood this. So he said, there is fire in the mud. And in fact, that fire burned down the whole Gaudiya Math. It was mentioned that these devotees, they spent few decades in litigations in the court. Few decades. So this was the sad plight of Gaudiamat. So Bhaktisiddhanta never wanted his disciple, Srila Prabhupada, to be part of that. He wanted him to be separate. So even in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada was practically doing everything for the Gaudiamat. Everything. So some of the prominent disciples told Srila Prabhupada, he should be our temple president. What did Bhaktisiddhanta say? No, let him be separate. And when devotees complained about Srila Prabhupada, because he was a householder, he was running a business, he had a family. So they said that Abhay Babu, he's not doing so much. You know, he's busy in his other material life. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, when time comes, he will do everything. So Bhaktisiddhanta understood very well the qualification of Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada understood the heart of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So this is the example of a first-class devotee, a first-class disciple, a first-class spiritual son. So this is our objective, to be first-class in our relationship to our spiritual master, to understand the mood of the spiritual master, to understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada. It's very important. How can we understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada and of our spiritual masters? How? It is very simple. We need to hear from them. We need to hear their instructions. Then we can understand. Read Srila Prabhupada's books. With that we can understand what is their mood. It is mentioned when we study Shastric studies like Bhakti Shastri or Bhakti Vaibhav or Bhakti Vedanta or anything, one of the themes that has been covered in our studies is the mood and mission. We need to understand the mood and mission of this movement. It is, of course, initially it is our mood. You know, we come as a visitor, we come as a guest. Then we come, we associate with the devotees, we hear, we have nice prasadam, we chant and dance. So this is the first step. Then what happens? We become part of the team. It's very important that we become part of the team. We can become part of the team right in the beginning, or one may not even become part of the team after a few decades. One can always remain a guest of this movement. It is possible. One can just come, you know, year after year, decade after decade, they can come, attend the arati, maybe one can chant, have prasadam and go back. Yes, one is making some spiritual progress, there is no doubt about it. But there is a time when one becomes part of the team. So when one becomes part of the team, when one embraces the mood and mission of this movement, the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada, then one is actually becoming part of the team. So this is understanding the heart of the spiritual master. This is when one understands the heart of a great leader like Srila Prabhupada. Then our life becomes successful. So this is the whole idea, is to become part of the team, not be always on the guest side. There are devotees who may be coming for many, many years. They never want to become part of the team. Something is holding back to commitment, to service. So commitment is something which actually makes one part of the team. When we understand the mood, then we want to commit to that mission. So when we commit to that mission, then the mercy comes. So here, how Swayambhuva Manu, he got the blessings of Lord Brahma, because here Brahma is giving blessings to Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa. How it is happening? Because when they appeared from the body of Lord Brahma, they surrendered completely unto Lord Brahma and said, we are ready to follow whatever you desire. They surrendered, we are ready to follow whatever you want. So it was an unconditional surrender. So they are ready to act. They are ready to take responsibility in behalf of Lord Brahma. Then they got the blessings. So in our spiritual life is completely dependent on the blessings of the devotees. It is very, very important. We need to get blessings of the devotees. Then only we can make progress in spiritual life. Usually we go to the devotees and we just beg, you know, kindly give me blessings, kindly give me blessings, please pray for me. Have you seen that? You know, we go approach devotees and we tell everyone, you know, kindly give me blessings, kindly give me blessings. Which is good, the mood is good, But one is automatically blessed when one serves the devotees. When one carry forward the instruction of the spiritual master, when one carry forward the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, then naturally blessings comes. Because blessings are not external. Okay, here it is coming in the verbal form, but blessings are actually coming from the heart. We all have that experience. Suppose if we see someone, or if we serve nicely, we can see that the devotees are naturally blessing, giving blessings. So blessings are coming from the heart. And it can be verbalized, just like that what is happening here, that Brahma is giving blessings to his son and his daughter, Shatrupa. So that's what is happening here. So blessings are always important, and it is exemplified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. We know the pastime where Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, and Mahaprabhu wanted to embark upon South Indian Yatra. He wanted to go to South India, and also he wanted to go to Vrindavan. In both times, Mahaprabhu was seeking blessings of all the devotees. In South Indian Yatra, okay, there is one pastime. And when he wanted to go to Vrindavan, he was constantly telling all the devotees, kindly allow me to go to Vrindavan. So this is another aspect, going to Vrindavan. If you want to go to Vrindavan, we need the blessings of the devotees. Generally, it is a good practice, if you want to go to Holy Dham, take blessing from the devotees, one can get permission from the spiritual master. It's not that I make my plan. Okay, I just go and I'll come back. I remember first time when I was about to go to Dhams, I didn't take permission of my spiritual master. Then one senior god brother, he told me, you know, have you taken permission of your spiritual master? I said, no. So he said, immediately write an email and, you know, seek his blessings. I did that. So it's very important that we get blessings of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas and take guidance while going to Dham. We cannot just go as a visitor, as a tourist. No, we cannot go to Dham as a tourist, you know. I have 3 days and I have, these are the list of places I want to visit. Many times the mood of the devotees is like that. But we cannot really get absorbed in the Dham if we go in a tourist mentality. Then we just click photos. That's all. I remember, I think Jagatarini Mataji was taking some devotees to Vrindavan, and one of my devotee friend, he went along, and Mataji told, don't take any photographs. Don't make it cheap. When you go to Vrindavan, don't think, you know, I can just take a photograph and I can just capture the place. That's the mood, right? Why the tourists go everywhere and, you know, click, 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 go everywhere. Why do they do that? They think we can capture that moment in a film or in a digital format. But it is not possible. If you want to capture, we need to capture with the consciousness. We need to capture with the heart. Then we can relish it. So, going to Dham, it's a whole different process. It's a bhakti process in itself. That's why residing in Dham or visiting in Dham, it is one of the Panjanga Bhakti, one of the 5 most important items of devotional service. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to take blessings from the devotees, and devotees wouldn't let him go. Mahaprabhu is the all independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he wanted to go to Vrindavan and devotees wouldn't allow. What to do in this condition? So devotees would say, now Rath Yatra is coming, so how can you go? So Mahaprabhu will say, okay, I'll wait till the Rath Yatra. Okay, after Rath Yatra probably I will go. So he will wait till the Rath Yatra. When the Rath Yatra finishes, the devotees would say, yo, the next festival is coming. Then they will say, now the Chaturmasya is coming. So in that way, the devotees were dragging this trip. He was telling, you know, don't go, you just stay here, you just stay here. So time passed, I think 1 or 2 years passed in this way, that Mahaprabhu couldn't go to Vrindavan and devotees wouldn't allow. So he was asking Sarvabhavatacharya, he was asking Ramananda Roy, he was asking Advaitacharya, because the devotees, they wanted to come from Navadvip and they wanted to visit Mahaprabhu every time during the Rath Yatra festival and spend 2-3 months with Mahaprabhu. So they thought, okay, we will miss his association, so we don't want him to go. And finally, the devotees had to give permission for the Lord to visit Vrindavan. So this is the position of the Lord. He himself is seeking blessings of the devotees. Similarly, this is the second visit of Mahaprabhu to Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri. Before that, one other time, Mahaprabhu tried to go to Vrindavan. But when Mahaprabhu reached Kanai Natashala, Sanatan Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu, when he was going to Vrindavan, he was not all alone. He had so many followers, thousands and thousands and thousands of followers accompanying Mahaprabhu. So Sanatan Goswami told Mahaprabhu, this is not the way to visit Vrindavan. If you visit Vrindavan in this way, you cannot really absorb yourself in the dham, because too many onlookers are there. Because Sanatan Goswami knows, Mahaprabhu is going to manifest Mahabhav, ecstatic symptoms, while in the dham. So he didn't want all these assembled people to obstruct the ecstasies. So he said, it is not better not to go at this point. So Mahaprabhu obeyed the instruction of Sanatana Goswami, and he didn't attempt to go this time to Vrindavan. So we can see, even the Lord himself is seeking blessings and following the orders of the devotees. Here we can see two things. One is, he is following the instructions of the devotees, setting an example. And on the other side, from the perspective of the devotees, what we can see, they are completely controlling the Lord by their love. So this is the greatness of Krishna. It is the greatness of Mahaprabhu. It is, he is allowing himself to be controlled by the pure love of his devotees. That is considered the vadanyata. It is the generosity of the Lord. Atma paryanta vadanyata. So Mahaprabhu, the Lord is bhakta varsala. He is very dear to his devotees. And the peak of this bhakta vatsal is that it is atma paryanta vadanyata, that he is ready to give himself to his devotees. So Mahaprabhu is manifesting this quality for the pleasure of the devotees. Now, we can see this is the position of a first class disciple or a first class devotee, that he is ready to completely follow the instruction of the spiritual master, understanding his desire. So this pastime is coming, or the first class disciple, second and the third class disciple, this pastime is coming in Srimad Bhagavatam, where King Puru, right? King Puru, anyone remembers? King Puru wanted to exchange his Yadu. Sorry? Yayati. Yayati wanted to, he was old. Right? He was old, and at the same time he had the desire to enjoy sensually. So he wanted his youth to be exchanged with one of his sons. So he approached the first son, but he didn't follow. He approached the second son, he also didn't follow. And when he approached the third son, who was? Puru. When he approached Puru, he agreed to do so. So Puru... So there, the description is given, the first class, second class, and the third class son or a disciple. So the second class disciple or a son is that after at least receiving the instruction, he is ready to follow. Right? If we get an instruction from the spiritual master or from the devotees, we should at least after receiving the instruction, we should be ready to follow the instruction. So if we cannot follow that, then situation is hopeless. So if we are not first class, at least we have to be in the second class platform. If we are in the second class platform and if we continue being in the second class platform, then there is a possibility to elevate to the first class platform by the mercy. Because by following, one gets the mercy and one understands the mood and mission of the spiritual master, then one will be able to follow, just understanding the desire. And the third one, it is the hopeless situation. What is the third one? That is, even after receiving the instruction, one is disobeying the spiritual master. So that is considered a very hopeless situation. So there, Bhagavatam says, such a son is considered mutra. putra, mutra means urine. It is just urine. He is equivalent to urine because putra means punnama naraga trayate iti putra. A son who is able to deliver his father and his forefathers from a hellish situation, punnama, a naraka, a hellish planet is called punnama. From there, if he is ready to, if he is able to deliver, then son is known as putra. Otherwise, he is considered mutra or just a urine. Because ultimately, both are coming from the same source. So they are considered, you know, putra and mutra. There's not much difference in terms of the words. So we shouldn't be in this third category as a mutra. Just useless. What's the use? Just waste. So when we are taking initiation or when we are following, trying to follow a spiritual master, we had to be very careful that we are ready to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And here, how it has to be followed? Without reservation and hrida, by the heart. So this is very important, that we need to follow the instruction without any reservation. You know what is with reservation? We hear only what we want to hear. So this is, if we try to take guidance from the devotees also, the same thing happens. We approach a devotee, and we approach many devotees, and we do that unless and until we find the right devotee who is going to give the instruction that we want. This is very important. It is especially important when we take shiksha. Means when we take instruction from the devotees, what happens is there is a tendency to ask 10 devotees what to do in a given circumstance. Why do we ask 10 devotees? Because we want to find, we have decided what to do in our mind, and we want an endorsement from someone. So we ask first devotee. So he tells something, no, that's not suitable for me. Then approach the second one, and we find someone who exactly matches what we want. Then we follow. Then we say, it's already told by this devotee, I already consulted the devotee and I have done that, it's very good. So when we take shiksha, especially when we take intimate shiksha, one has to be careful. One needs a few devotees, one or two devotees or two or three devotees, a few devotees, few trusted devotees from which we take main shiksha. It's very important. Not that we ask everyone in the community. So this is the one side, it is a sign of a neophyte, that is revealing the heart without discrimination. A neophyte only will, you know, go everyone and tell the problem. Because they are not, it means actually they are not serious about the problem. If somebody is serious, then one approaches somebody who is qualified. There's no point approaching who cannot help you. It is said, if somebody is in need of someone, something, then there is no point begging to a beggar. Is there any point? There is no point. It is a waste of time. So one need to beg who can give. In the same way, when we have a problem and when we need a solution, when we need an instruction, we need to approach a person who we trust and we can understand that he is qualified. So that is a madhyam level. That is a madhyama devotee, an intermediate devotee who can discriminate, he can see. Then approach, get the instruction and try to follow. And if he's finding difficulty, go back and ask, you know, these are the difficulties, so what to be done? So if a mature devotee who is guiding will be able to sort out the situation. Otherwise, again, we are coming to a platform of, you know, the third, useless, because we are not ready to accept the instruction. So it is not the question of desire, it is coming to the second level where the instructions are given, still we don't want to follow the instructions. So this will cause serious problem in our devotional service. Because in our devotional service, it is completely guided by the instructions. In our whole devotional service, from beginning till end, we are guided by the instructions. There is no time where we become independent. That's why it is mentioned here, every living entity, small or big, has the free choice, free will to be independent. If we want to follow, we can follow. And if we don't want to follow, we don't need to follow. The independence is there. So if we misuse the independence, then we are checking our own spiritual progress. So that's why the word unreserved is very important. We shouldn't check our spiritual progress. We need to be quite careful in this regard. So the tendency can come that after a few years, one can think, I am independent now. Or one can think, when can I get the freedom? When will I be free in devotional service, where I can do what I want to do? There is no such time. There is no such time. Even in the perfected stage, even in the spiritual world, devotees are under the guidance of other devotees. Or ultimately, everyone is under the guidance of the Supreme Lord. So the guidance is there all the time. Nobody is independent. It is not restricting the enjoyment. It is not restricting the happiness. That is the point. When we talk about freedom, freedom usually translates to happiness. But here the important point we need to understand is that if we are under the guidance of the devotees, if there are instructions, that instructions are not restricting our freedom, it's not actually restricting our happiness. It is enhancing our happiness and it is enhancing our freedom. That's why it is said the four regulative principles are, they are regulative principles of freedom. It's not just binding, it is actually freedom. When we are following regulative principles, we are actually free. You know, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. If we give up completely all these four stuff, internally and externally, think about the freedom one has. Think about, we are attached to so many anarthas in our mind, unwanted things. Suppose we are giving away all of them. Think about how much freedom we have to think about Krishna. Can you see, if we want to think about Krishna, we want to read pastimes of Krishna, we want to understand the philosophy, we want to analyze the philosophy, but since our mind is attached to so many unwanted things, only because of that, our access is limited. Can you feel that? So freedom means just giving up the unwanted things. That is actual freedom. Not getting more entangled in the anarthas, in these sinful activities, that is restricting our freedom. It's not enhancing our freedom. So, even the principles, even the guiding principles of devotional service and the instructions given by acharyas, gurus, they are enhancing our freedom. They are enhancing our happiness, spiritual happiness. Because soul really wants freedom. Soul doesn't want material bindings. So when we are following the spiritual principles, it is breaking away all the material bindings and giving the spiritual freedom. So when we understand this, we will be more encouraged to follow the instructions wholeheartedly. So Srila Prabhupada says, the example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, bro.
One comment about Vishnupadam.
Yeah.
King Santanu wanted to marry Satyavati.
That's right, yeah.
And he approved the vision of Satyavati's father.
Yes.
So that's an excellent example of how you follow the father's movement.
Yeah, that's a very good example. It's a very powerful example. Because when Bhishma Dev understood, or what was his name? Priyavrata, right? Sorry. Devavrata. So when Devavrata, or Bhishma, when he understood the desire of his father, he took the vow immediately. Because it is considered for a Kshatriya to be celibate is impossible. It is uncommon and it is very difficult. Because a Kshatriya by nature is influenced by passion. So one cannot remain celibate in the mode of passion. So for Bhishma to take that vow was something, you know, unusual. That's the reason all the demigods, they showered flowers on him. And they shouted, Bhishma, Bhishma. Because such a great vow, it's a great personality. It is considered a very striking example. And he maintained that throughout the life.
He also got the benediction from his father that you can leave your body whenever you want.
Yeah.
Great benediction.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
I have a question, Prabhu.
Yes, please.
When you say that, you're saying understand the mood of the spiritual master. But, and we are seeing obviously the spiritual master that he's been practicing, he's almost in
You need to understand what is meant by the mood. So mood and mission goes along. Mood of a spiritual master means he has that devotional mood. He has a service mood. When we study, for example, our founder Acharya is Srila Prabhupada. By studying Srila Prabhupada's books, hearing his lectures, hearing his conversations, we can understand what is the mood of Srila Prabhupada. So that is his devotional mood. For example, Srila Prabhupada always showed a kind of emergency, an urgency in delivering this knowledge to others and in one's own practice. If you read that, we can understand that mood of Srila Prabhupada. So this is devotional mood. Srila Prabhupada manifested the mood of preaching. What he was doing, he was continuously traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness. So this is mood of Srila Prabhupada. Can you understand? So we need to see, this is the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. By studying the books, we can understand what is the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. It's not too complicated. Very clearly, even Bhagavad Gita very clearly mentions. In the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which explains the three modes of material nature, Prabhupada mentions, even if our aim is even a fraction of the society becomes Krishna conscious, then the whole problems of the world can be solved. Prabhupada was explaining, you know, at least come to, bring the mode of goodness, at least let everyone come to vegetarianism. Prabhupada, you know, you understand what the Acharya wants when you read. Then we can act accordingly. Does it make sense?
The message is actually the mood.
Okay? Eh?
The messaging behind, like, what was the mission? The mission more than
mood. It is the message. Mood has a deeper aspect than just the message in itself. Say, for example, Prabhupada encouraged everyone to do book distribution, for example. Even previously, everyone who joins the temple, pretty much, you know, not much later, everyone was sent to distribute books and to preach. So it is a specific mood of Srila Prabhupada. So preaching you can consider in general as a message, as an instruction, but there is a mood that is demonstrated by Srila Prabhupada. That is, okay, anyone comes, everyone, let everyone be engaged in the preaching mission. We don't need to first get purified, first become a pure devotee or an advanced devotee, and then start preaching. Whoever comes in different ways, okay, prasadam distribution, book distribution, or let everyone get engaged in preaching right from the beginning. In that way, let one become purified. So it's the mood of Srila Prabhupada. It's not necessarily just an instruction, but there's a mood to it. You understand? Okay, our process is, first, we engage in the process of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of preaching, and in that way, we get purified. We can even see that in the purport and the explanation to this particular verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think in the Bharata Bhumite Manishya Jarmayar and also Prithivate Yathache Nagaradikam, and all these verses, Prabhupada has this mood that, okay, it's not that first let everyone become pure devotees and then go and preach. No, first preach, and in that way we get purified, and then we become advanced. So there is a mood, and in any aspect there is a mood of Srila Prabhupada. Yes.
Srila Prabhupada actually just answered about what places in, said that should have any books.
Yeah. Two things, distribute books and spread this movement. This will please Srila Prabhupada.
Also, I have a question now. For those of us who are cursed with second and third class intelligence, how can we maintain that sense of urgency in spiritual life to require us? Our tendency is to think maybe, you know, to, it's always in the future when we make that commitment. Last time I was addicted to some
think I have the same problem. In fact, I noticed in myself also that we give up certain things at certain stages in our life. For example, different habits, maybe sinful activities. So still, we hold on to something else. This is one thing, at least I noticed in myself. So what I understood was, this is in the progressive stage of devotional service. In each stage, we have something to give up. Okay, initially, you know, before coming to Krishna consciousness, maybe we may have engaged in sinful activities, maybe meat eating or drinking or whatever, whatever. So at one point, we give that up. Then we come to a devotional stage, okay, we are following the regulatory principles. But still, there are so many anartha, so many things in our mind which we see, which is there. I really don't want to give them up. So this is where it becomes really difficult. And as Prabhuji was mentioning, we see that, you know, I don't feel any emergency. Maybe tomorrow I can give that up. You know, I have the anarthas and I can see. And I think maybe today it is okay. I can keep something which is unnecessary in my mind. I know it is not good. But I can hold on to that at least for today. And tomorrow also I'll think the same thing. I can have this tomorrow also. So this is, yes, it is true. We are actually lagging. We are actually delaying our spiritual progress. What I can say is we need to sincerely pray to Krishna that help us to not just show the anarthas, but also to give the strength to give that up. In fact, it's mentioned that if you really want such kind of help, you know, go in front of Narasimhadev and pray that, you know, kindly allow me to be purified. Kindly allow me to give that, let go the unwanted things which are, you know, so precious for me, and I think it's so precious for me. Let that go. So, you know, sincerely pray to the Lord. That can really help. This is because this is the stage in which, you know, we are externally doing the devotional service. You know, we are chanting, you know, we are attending the morning program, whole day practically, maybe service. Things are happening externally, but internally still, there is an attachment, and, you know, we are just, you know, we can see that and we don't want to give that up. So we need to really sincerely pray to the Lord. That can help. And also internally, do our devotional activities very sincerely. That has an impact. For example, if we chant very sincerely, it has an impact. Means, you know, just, okay, I don't care about my anarthas, whatever it is. Now, these 2 hours, I will just push myself to hear the holy name and to get absorbed in the holy name. That pushing really helps. And after 2 hours, we feel, okay, at least something happened. So it's actually a step towards purification. Because that really gives us strength to give a lower taste. In principle, to give up a lower taste, we need to develop a higher taste. We need to really push for the higher taste. Chanting, definitely. We should push for our chanting. Means to hear the holy name and to get absorbed, the mind getting absorbed in the holy name. That really helps. Because when we experience something higher by Krishna's mercy, this is one thing happens when we take devotional service seriously. And when Krishna gives some mercy, then we experience a higher taste. And when we get that, then we think, okay, I want to really just give that up, you know. I have this, you know, this anartha so much, so long I have, and I'm cherishing this for such a long time. Now I really want to give that up. When we have that, okay, we give that up, and then we can move to a step higher. Then again, we have the next problem to deal with. So it is a step by step, I think. But of course, by our service and by following the instructions of the spiritual master, if they become really pleased, then Krishna can just remove the whole thing. The Lord has that ability. He can just, you know, crush the whole thing. All the anarthas, he can just remove that. So, yeah, combination of few things. One is sadhana and sincere service and prayers. I practically said everything, I think. I don't have anything more to say in the devotional service. Everything is covered. That's what I can think of. I should apply myself because I can see the problems in my heart. So it's a good is a good reminder for me. Thank you. Is that okay? You can add something more. Yeah.
Mm. It's hard to progress in anything else.
Yeah.
And part of stress is very important. That's why you create a society.
Mm.
And a society divides, it's like an effect. And then, of course, following the rules and regulations,
mm.
and fairing the fire. I was thinking about Prabhupada's life at the moment, he was the first volume of the Leon Legion.
Mm. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, because our movement is not anartha consciousness, it is Krishna consciousness. So if we absorb mind in Krishna, that is fine. At the same time, because by mercy of Krishna, he will show the anarthas to work on. That's all. It's not that all the time we have to think about anartha, we have to think about Krishna. We need to, the whole process of giving up anartha is developing higher taste. If we have a higher taste, then when you see anartha, we'll be able to give that up. Otherwise, it is very difficult. At one point, one has to, you know, go to the next level of taste, go to the next level, and we think, okay, this is, I can live without this. Go to the next level, okay, I can live without that thing also, like that. It slowly progresses. Yeah. All right. Yes, please. Enjoyed by Krishna means when we are serving him, anyone, we are allowing them to be enjoyed. Sorry, they are allowing us to be enjoyed by them. So when we are serving Krishna, what does that mean? When we are serving Krishna, we are allowing ourselves to be enjoyed by Krishna. So the meaning is that we have to serve Krishna. So in that way, that will please him. So the difference is that initially we may think that by doing service or by chanting, I'll become happy. Usually this is initially when we preach, that's what we say, you know, you be, chant and be happy. Right? Chant and be happy. So if you chant, you become happy. Which is true, but actually when we are sincerely chanting, Krishna is actually becoming happy. He is becoming pleased. So in turn, we are becoming happy. So in the Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto, there is Prahlad Maharaj gives an example of if you want to decorate a reflection. So if you are standing in front of the mirror and you want to see the reflection, you are actually not seeing your face. You are only seeing the reflection. So you want, ultimately you want to see that your reflection is beautified by some decoration. For that, what you do? You put on makeup or whatever on your face. Then you see the reflection is also beautified. In the same way, okay, if you want to be happy, we don't think about, okay, I want to be happy. We just serve Krishna. Then happiness is a byproduct. Happiness is not the main product of bhakti. It is a byproduct. Main product is Krishna become pleased. It is Krishna's pleasure. By that we also become happy and pleasure. Okay. Thank you very much. Gandha Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Circumstances like Bali Maharaj rejecting.
That's right, yeah.
I think when we present, we, you know, it's good to mention these things because a lot of gurus, they have fallen and some of them have been broken-hearted because
right,
they
yeah.
were led to
correct, yeah.
Led to believe they have to obey everything and anything without any discrimination. But also, it's not that you should question everything and anything to your guru, but still, we have to try to discriminate what's, you know, like, and find some, if we can find some basic principle which can, you know, make us discriminate, you know, like.
Yeah, I appreciate that point, yeah. Thank you.
Just to balance it, because we have been made.
I was, first of all, this was not prepared. I just spoke. That's, I don't know how to speak.
Second,
the purport is fully emphasizing following. So,
yeah.
I just,
okay.
yeah. There was no back and forth thing was not there, so it was in the next verse. Actually, it'll be more discussed. I think that I just read the next translation and purport, where I think in the purport, the one writing about the four previous verses, they didn't follow. So manifest the anger, therefore Manu was very encouraging. So in this, your point can be more discussed. I didn't even read that report. Here it is. In here it is. Very strong.
Nice plus.
Thank you, bro. It's a very strongly the example for.